Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Friday Night Football Preview. This is Deb Gantz coming to you from Southern California, and I am happy to introduce to you tonight's guest, Catherine Vivo, who's also here in California. She's the owner and one of the quarterbacks for the California Quake. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. I didn't talk to you yet today, but I sent you an email, let me put it that way, and kind of last minute, but let's just kind of get into it real quickly here. How long, Catherine, have you been at the helm for the Quake?
It feels like forever. I've been playing with them for about 5 seasons, but this is just my second year running the team. But I've always been helping out and been in the back, and somewhere along the way, I kind of just got caught up into it and got asked to own the team. So I was like, sure, why not?
Yeah. So you've owned it for about a couple years.
Yeah, this is my second season.
And have you played that entire time? Like you didn't take a year off or anything? You've played and been the owner?
Yeah, I've been playing since I took over the team. My intentions was actually next year to take a break, but I always say that every year, so we'll see what happens next year.
You know, once you start playing football, it's like you can't stop. I know a lot of friends that haven't played for 2 or 3 years, and every season they say, oh, I want to. So how much time do you spend? Well, first of all, let me ask you, as a player, how much time do you spend practicing every week?
I'd say about, we do 3 practices a week during season. Preseason we do 4 times a week. We do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday for about 2 hours every practice, and then we have a 6-hour practice on Saturday. Season actually starts, we then do Tuesdays, Thursdays, and we have film on Wednesdays. So it's pretty intense. I mean, it takes up a lot of our time.
And then how much time do you dedicate besides that trying to run things behind the scenes?
Every second I get. I have a really cool company that I work for during the day, and I kind of basically manage being able to work on my job at the same time, juggle around working on football stuff. I mean, I'm up and about by 5:30 in the morning. I'll hop on the computer, get ready to go to work. I'll then hop onto another computer at work, and I kind of just bounce back and forth. And as soon as I get home, which is around 3:30, I hop back onto it until practice at 6:45, and it's constant. It's every chance I get. I mean, I probably have, I don't know, I'd say a good 4 or 5 hours sleep every night if I'm lucky.
Yeah, so, I remember the day. I had a 100-mile commute one way when I was playing, and I remember getting to bed at 1, getting up at 4 or 5, and trying to stay awake.
I have the energy for it, surprisingly. I mean, I think me playing and managing the team actually kind of balances me out, so it works out for me.
That's good. You seem to be doing a good job with all the things you do. Let me go specifically to a question about the improvements that you, I don't know, when you play for an organization, you see things that you might change. You think, oh, man, if I was in charge, I'd do this. And now that you've had a couple years to really put into action some of the things that you thought about for a while, what changes have you made and how have they been gratifying and helpful to the team?
I think our biggest thing was becoming a disciplined sport. Football is a very disciplined sport. I mean, I actually had the opportunity to play in high school with the guys, and when I first started playing with the women's league, it was not at all what I experienced in high school. So I basically implemented what I had experienced, you know, to a certain degree, because these women all choose to be out there, so you obviously don't want to beat them down to the point where they're turned off by the sport. So my biggest thing was just being organized. I mean, we all have to look like a team. So one of the biggest changes is that we always have a dress code for game days, a dress code after, before, at practice. We always look like a team. and just really enforcing things. Like, you know, if you guys don't come to practice, then you obviously don't play. And in the past,
right,
it was always whoever was the best player, whether you came to practice or not, you know, played. And we weren't a unit. If you weren't at practice, how could we mesh 11 players on the field? So it was a big thing for us. We just enforced a lot of rules, and we explained it to them. I said, you know what, I'm an open book. Here's the rules that our organization is going to run by, and if you have any questions of why we're doing it, feel free to ask me. And people ask me all the time, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? And I give them the budget, everything. I let them know everything about the organization that they need to know and to understand it. And it's worked out for us the past 2 years. I mean, this year, I mean, we had a squad of 50-plus when we first started at the beginning of the year, and we were getting people like 40-plus at every practice. I've never seen that before.
You know, the seasons that I was able to play, that made a big difference. The uniformity, the everybody being on the same page, it's nothing that you can overestimate the importance of. And, you know, just being a fan and coming to the games, having absolutely nothing to do with the organization myself, I can totally see the effect and the changes that you're telling me about now. I can look back and say, oh, that's made a difference. So congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
It's hard to do. Did you have a little adversity at first? I'm sure you must have, huh?
You know, implementing the changes was difficult the first season, but I was lucky enough that my veteran players that came back really supported me. And they're like, you know, we got your back 110%. We will lead these rookies in the same direction that you want us to go in. So I think that's where it's kind of an advantage, the fact that I was a player as well. But look, I don't like these rules about being late or being out of dress code and stuff like that, but we need it to become a team. And, you know, as a player, when I'm out there, I lose all my powers as being owner. I'm basically just a player like everybody else. I still have to run like everybody else. I don't get special treatment, and that's the best part, is that the rules I've implemented are things that are coming from other players and myself being one. So it kind of just worked out. I mean, all the players really supported me, and they really just trusted me in the direction I was going with on the team. So, I mean, in the beginning, some of the changes were a little bit shocking for the players, but in the end, they all supported me. So, I mean, that was the biggest help, is having my vet support me in what I was doing.
Well, I tell you, you come across as somebody who just has this authoritative aura about you, and that's probably making it a little bit easy for you. Have you had a lot of leadership roles in your life, or is this your first time you've really taken on a leadership role? I can't see that that's the case, that you've just bounced into being a leader, but I'll go ahead and ask the question, and you can tell me the things you've done, because I'm sure there's a number of them.
I have. I've actually always, I guess, started that, I mean, in sports. I mean, I've always been in sports since elementary. I've always been a team leader, as well as I was one of those people that were in high school that ran for president and did all those leadership stuff and part of clubs, and it helped. I've organized a lot of events, and I think that's really helped me with trying to run this team. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Everything involving football is just fun. I mean, there's nothing better than knocking the crap out of somebody, and there's nothing like seeing your team be successful. I mean, there's so many good things about it. It's just such a driving force that you know, everything works out. It's tough, and yet that's a part of the gratification, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Let me get to another question. By the way, I wanted to throw something in here. This might not be related, but are you the person – I looked at your website today, and I happened to follow it because I like to look and see who does the websites. And I know one of my friends used to design the website, and it was great then, but I just noticed there were some differences. Are you the person who does the website as well?
Yes. One of the things that helps is I'm actually – my day job is that I'm a graphic and web designer. So that's actually how I got involved in the back end with the Quake. I mean, like 5 or 6 seasons ago, was I took a look at their site, and I'm like, oh my, I need to change. We need to look like a professional team. So I was actually able to revamp the entire site, and that's like my baby. I love updating that site. It's a lot of fun.
Well, you have embedded graphics and movies. I mean, it's one thing to have a recap of the game. It's another thing to take those highlight plays and just be able to feature them on the website. Like, I mean, you can't convey how exciting it was when you guys took the kickoff last week and Ninji Martin ran it back the length of the field and you guys were up 6-0 within, like, what, 14 seconds, maybe less?
Yeah, yeah.
That was awesome. And then when I saw your website and it was on there, I was like, oh, that is so cool. It's pretty impressive. I really appreciate the way that you've changed it. You're right. It does have that appearance of a professional team. And, you know, it's unfortunate that women's football, you know, we don't get paid to play. But, you know, if we keep getting owners like you who push the bar and keep escalating expectations, I think football is just going to benefit from that.
This is most definitely just the beginning of it. I mean, as every team progresses, and I mean, that's kind of what we're all gearing towards, is that eventually, from what we do now, we hope that it will be a professional sport where we do get paid for what we do. I mean, we just have to act like it right now. Though we don't get paid, we have to act like it.
Right. Yeah. When I go to the games for the Quake, and I haven't been able to go to too many, I do a lot of things with the Amazons as well, so I'm kind of involved with football all over the place. But, you know, you really run a professional team, and that's kind of hard. Who supports you in that the most? Do you have the players that pitch you in, or do you have volunteers? How do you get so much done in such a short period of time?
I actually have there's actually three of us that own the team. I'm just the primary. I actually have two other business partners that assist me, and I do have a couple volunteers. I mean, you'd be surprised on the resources you get on just posting up, you know, ads on, hey, volunteer this, volunteer that, and, you know, it's all about networking yourself. I always try to get out there. Whenever there's an event, I always try to get my cards out there. I try to get somebody out there to represent us, and it's amazing how people just, hey, they give me a call, like, you know what, I saw this, this is awesome, sure, I want to help. Sometimes it's only for half a season, sometimes for a couple of years. It really depends. But, I mean, we've had, you know, a lot of people that's just given me a call and said, we want to help. This is just, it's too good of an opportunity to not help. So it's just a matter of networking myself, finding the right people, and just delegating everything. I mean, the hardest thing is that, you know, this is my baby. I take on as much as possible, but I realize playing and owning this team and trying to run everything, it's impossible for me to do everything. So I'm very fortunate that I have a great staff. They're all volunteers. They all give just as much time as I do. And, you know, the kick that they get out of it is just seeing us go out there and just play.
Well, they probably had a pretty fun time last Saturday. I know you didn't come off with a win last week, but having seen the very first time you guys faced the Amazons and then seeing this last game last weekend, it was amazing the difference. You guys stepped it up. I mean, it was exponential in the improvement. And you guys have had some adversity. You want to talk about how the team's doing, even though you guys have had some injuries?
It's a hard season opener to play up against a team like the Amazons. I mean, I will most definitely give it up to their program, and they have a great team, great coaching staff, and I mean, I've actually played with them my first year, and we knew it was going to be a tough game. One of the hardest things for us was that we actually had a lot of rookies. We probably had maybe, say about 25 rookies that had never played football before. So, you know, out of the 44 that's on our team, it was really hard to be able to find that chemistry off the bat. But, you know, after a couple games, I mean, we finally found our chemistry and found out, you know, how to actually work like a team. And we actually had a lot of fun playing against Amazon. It was a really competitive game. We made a lot of mistakes, you know, things that we're going to fix when we play up against Sirens tomorrow. We did lose a lot of key players. It's one of those weird seasons. We've never had this many injuries, but, I mean, it's all about ankles and knees this year. But we've lost, I'd say, about four or five of our starting players. By season opener, I'd say.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. Just, I mean, they're all based off of minor tackles and just landing the wrong way. And it's unfortunate. It happens. It's an aggressive sport, and we all knew that from the beginning. And we make adjustments. We're fortunate enough to also have a large enough team that we had to adjust people. We had to, you know, teach people new positions. Luckily, our coaching staff was able to teach us an offense and a defensive position in case something like this happened. So, I mean, we were well prepared. We just weren't prepared to lose so many players in the beginning.
Well, I tell you, you would not have known from the game last weekend that you guys were missing key players, I tell you. And may I just compliment a couple of your players. Ninji Martin and Angela Mims are basically like two tandem Mack trucks. They are amazing. And watching them just run over people, I mean, you'd think that they're going to get tackled, and they'd run over like two or three people. It was amazing.
Yeah, they will definitely get our team riled up. I mean, they... not only just in their skills, I mean, it's just they teach us so much at practice, like on the field. I mean, it's just the fact that they've been playing for a while. I mean, Ninji was a great addition to our team. I know that she had her team in San Luis Obispo, and she said, you know what, I want to play on an 11-man, you know, team. And I was like, you know what, you're more than welcome. Come check out our program. And she loved it. I mean, the first time she came out, she really enjoyed it. She found out basically what the Quake organization is about, and she fits in great. I mean, literally, her and Havoc, I mean, I love seeing them go at it. I mean, first day of hitting, we already knew what kind of matchups we wanted to see. We're like, oh, we want to see Ninji and Havoc. We want to see them up against each other. And they're both 1-1, the same kind of player. I mean, they're both very powerful and hitting players. I mean, I'm just actually fortunate they're on our team.
Oh, I know. I'm sure most of the people who are on your team think that way. So now Havoc is Angela Mims, right?
Yes.
Your team is notorious for having these nicknames. I'm curious, Catherine, what is your nickname? Do they call you Cat? Or I know you use Cat a lot for your different...
It varies for me. It's gone from Cat to Squeaks, and this year I acquired the name Goggles because I can't wear contacts anymore, so... During practice, I wear goggles, so they've been calling me all sorts of names. It's actually an initiation in our team to, you come on here, you lose your government name. You come out here, you play, and we basically initiate you and give you a nickname. Everybody gets a kick out of it.
I don't want to, you know, ask you questions that are kind of going to give away any of your program or your, you know, what you do, but I can't help but ask a question about that little sign thing that you use for your offense. That is so cool. And it's like, you know, I don't want to say too much, but when you guys transitioned where you were just in that, I would call it a hurry offense, and I don't know if that's what you guys call it, if it's a thing that you do on purpose, but that was a very nice tool that you were able to use against the Amazons, and it's really a cool
thing. It's been hard actually learning it that way. I mean, when we first started learning this, I was just like, what are we doing? And I don't have very good vision, and it's hard when you're out there too because everything's literally a blur because there's so much going on. There's hundreds of people there. There's people yelling, and you're rushed because you got to get out of this huddle, and yet I got to concentrate and look at this play call, and it's just it's pretty overwhelming. But it's funny though because when I go out there and I play, everything just kind of clicks. I mean, Coach Penn did a terrific job in training us at practice and just being repetitious, and, you know, we just kind of picked up on it. I mean, I think the first time we played a scrimmage, I was all over the place confused, but now when I go in a game-time situation, it's just second nature to us. So it's most definitely made us more focused, you know, to kind of distract us from the defense that's lining up, from the crowd yelling, from the coaches yelling, and just focus on what is the next play. And it's worked out for us very well.
Well, you know, it's almost like that whole discipline mentality that you've been trying to put into play, it just is, you know, kind of a result. And that the little signal system is just like an evidence that that's working. But it is awesome. It's fun to watch you guys when you're ready to go so quickly. It's unbelievable. It makes the game so much faster and more interesting.
Oh, yeah, I think our first game, a lot of our rookies actually started on our offense, and after the end of the game, they were like, I was not expecting the game to go that quickly. Like, they were overwhelmed, they were like, wow. And I was like, but you were fine, you played well, you executed your plays, you're a little bit nervous, but they were just like, that offense just went by so quickly, it was just like, every play just felt like second. I'm like, it was, because that's how fast we have to get going, get on the ball. So, I mean, it does help. You know, it helps us, you know, get the media attention. You know, like, hurry up, get the play, get on the line, and let's execute this next play. So,
yeah. Well, let me transition us into what are you anticipating with the game this weekend? You guys, I can just say, are seemingly a different team than when you first played the Sirens.
Yeah,
didn't
most
you
definitely.
Already play them one time?
Yeah, we did play them once, and they blew us out of the waters. I mean, it was 46-0. And, you know, when we actually watched that film, we actually didn't play that bad. We just made a lot of mistakes that the Sirens capitalized on. And, you know, we've watched film over and over, and, you know, just reviewing our mistakes that we've done with the Amazons and the Sirens, and, you know, in the end, we realize we've just beaten ourselves. I mean, these two teams are very competitive, but the games most definitely should have been a lot closer, you know, the first time we played them. You know, the biggest thing that we're doing right now is just being focused. We made a lot of mistakes. You know, there's times where there's five people who know what they're doing and the other six just were lost. And you saw it on the film. I mean, there's people who missed their blocks, you know, didn't run their routes, stood there, and it was just, it was horrible to watch over and over again. Because Coach Penn, he drills us in watching film. I mean, we watch film constantly. And it's just, it helps. And I think that's what helped us for the Amazons, and it's most definitely going to help us for tomorrow. I mean, right before I got on the phone call with you guys, I was actually with one of our coaches that's over at my house right now. We're going over plays and studying. I mean, it never stops.
Yeah, that's the thing about football. There's always something else to do. Such an intricate game when you approach it from as many angles as you can. It's a busy sport. So Coach Penn implemented that sideline signal. He's got quite a coaching staff helping him. How many coaches do you guys have?
We have eight.
You know, this year the Dallas Diamonds, they replaced their coach, and they had six different people trying out for that head coaching position. I know that there have been seasons in the past in the Los Angeles area where teams have really struggled to find a single coach, and here you've been able to find eight coaches. So, again, I think that just goes back to your way of leading and delegating just permeates your entire organization. But which coach is, like, one of the newer coaches and yet has really been instrumental in you guys moving along and making such progress?
You know what? From our coaching staff last year, we actually brought in the exact same coaching staff that we had. We were just fortunate enough that all these coaches that we've had has actually coached with us in the past, except for, three of them, I believe. Yeah, three of them. And we actually lost two of our female coaches because they decided to come out and play. After they saw our program last year, they were like, okay, I'm still playing next year. So they most definitely did that. They came out and they said, you know, I'm not coaching anymore. I want to play on this team. And we had to find a couple other new coaches. We actually found a strength and conditioning coach and a couple other, like, part-time assistant coaches to help us out. But, you know, I think that's what makes our coaching staff really well with our organization is the fact that they've actually been together on and off for the past couple of years. So, I mean, Coach Penn has done a great job in, you know, meeting with the coaches every week, reviewing film. I mean, Coach Penn puts in just as much hours as I do, sometimes more, because he goes through film constantly every night. I mean, we talk every day, and I'm sure he's probably sick of me by now, but we both have, you know, a very strong passion for football, and I think that's what makes us, you know, a great team.
Well, you know, Coach Penn, he eats, drinks, sleeps, and I think thinks some more about football. I mean, he actually moved out to California from Florida, I think, because of football, just the opportunity to coach it. So you can't get anybody that loves football any more than him. Yeah, but I tell you, you guys together have really made an impact on this California Plate team. So, Catherine, I don't know if there's any closing remarks that you'd like to share with us, but if there is anything that you'd like to share that I haven't asked you any questions about, I'll give you a second to think here. And What would you say, for instance, to the fans to tell them how much you guys are appreciative of what they've done for your team?
Like any other team, we would not exist if we didn't have the support of, you know, the entire LA and Orange County. All our fans come from all sorts of places. I mean, I have people that drive down an hour and a half to come watch our team or watch our games. And without the crowd, without our fans, without their support, why else would we be out there playing? I mean, it's most definitely helped us when we went out there in our season opener and we had over 500 people in attendance. It was overwhelming. And, you know, this is the kind of crowd that we want to be able to play for. And we don't just play just to play. We play for to entertain everybody else. We play for our passion. And one of the biggest things I want everybody to know is that women's football is not just a recreational, you know, after-school program type thing where we all just meet up and play a game. I mean, these women all have jobs. They all have families. We all have, you know, other more important things to do, but yet we all find a time, you know, to go out there, to put in our own money to play, to get beat up, bruised up, bleed, broken bones, and we love it. And we wouldn't have it any other way. And the fans are what keeps us going. So we are very grateful for all everyone's support, my staff, everybody that has volunteered and supported us in every possible way.
Well, thank you, and it's nice to have the owner and player perspective this week, but you guys have had a tough season and yet a rewarding season so far, and I just appreciate your time and wish you the best tomorrow as you guys face the Sirens.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
I do want to throw in there, though, that miraculously you were able to find somebody to do the game broadcast, and on Women's Football Talk continues.com, your game is going to be broadcast. Do you want to share anything about that? If there are any fans who are out there, who's going to do your broadcast for you?
Yeah, we actually found I've had a bunch of resources of people who's been wanting to do announcing our games, and I was fortunate enough to find a gentleman. I haven't even worked with him before, but he had his schedule open. His name was Alex. And he's actually going to come out and do the play-by-play tomorrow, which is really cool. I mean, one of the best things is that there's a lot of people that nationwide or up north that want to be at the game, but they just can't. So it's going to be a great opportunity for people to be able to hear the game, see what's going on. And one of the new things that we're trying to do next season is try to get a live broadcast of a webcam of the game so that people could actually enjoy our games live without having to travel so far. So It's going to be a lot of fun. I think it's going to be a really good game tomorrow.
Right, and kickoff is 6 p.m. That's the Pacific Standard Time.
Yes, and actually our game tomorrow is youth night, and so children that are 12 and under are for free, and we have all sorts of activities and free giveaways and stuff like that for everybody.
Excellent. Okay, well, good luck to you tomorrow night and with the rest of your season, and thank you so much for being on the show.
All right, thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Have a good night.
Bye.
Okay, so those of you who are still listening, this is the portion where I typically have pre-recorded about a half an hour of information for you about the games coming up, and unfortunately that system went AWOL today, and I was unable to do a pre-recording. So this might have a lot of ums and little paper shuffles in the background, but I'll do the best I can here. We're going to start off with the IWFL, since we just talked to one of their representing teams, the California Quake. There are several undefeated teams in the IWFL. We've got the Seattle Majestics with the 2-0 against the Tier 1, and then a 1-0 against the Tier 2 teams, and so that brings them to 3-0. The LA Amazons are 3-0, again, two against other Tier 1 teams, and then a game where they played a Tier 2 team. And I asked BJ, because I was not privy to this information, what makes the difference, what's a Tier 1 team as opposed to a Tier 2 team? Because in looking at some of the stats, there are some awesome Tier 2 teams, which I'm going to go into a little bit later. But basically what she explained is that some of the teams are having a rebuilding year. They don't have quite as many players on the roster. that can be a factor. And then some of the teams maybe having a little bit of trouble with the travel have decided to go into the Tier 2 bracket. And so basically there can be a number of factors involved in that. But just because they're a Tier 2 team, we don't make the assumption, and I'm guilty of this, so we learn this together. The Tier 2 teams are not necessarily inferior as far as level of play. So that being clarified, I'll still distinguish between those just for the sake of the ratings, because teams who play a tier two team don't seem to get as many points in the ratings. So that's a factor. But the Chicago Force, another undefeated team, they're 4-0, two games against tier one teams and two games against tier two. I'm going to talk a little bit about their statistics later on. The Boston Militia, who have a very high rating, they're 3-0. The DC Divas are 3-0. They just whooped up on Pittsburgh this past weekend. And then the Dallas Diamonds are 4-0. So in the Tier 2 teams, the undefeated teams right now are the Carolina Phoenix. They're 3-0. The Carolina Queens, they are 4-0. And those two, both Tier 2 teams, both being in Carolina, are going to match up May 30th, and then again in July on the 13th. That is going to be a heck of a game, because those teams have really had a good season, and they're crosstown rivals, so I'm kind of anxious to see how that game goes. Another team to watch out that's a Tier 2 team, the Warriors. Now, that team is a Wisconsin team, and there have been a number of outstanding teams. In fact, and I don't know if they were the Wisconsin, or I'm trying to remember. I think they billed themselves as the Northern Ice, actually won a WPFL championship about 5 years ago. The reason I remember that is they defeated one of the teams I was working with. But I'm trying to find out, do a little research and see if they have a few of the ice players. But definitely that Wisconsin team has some strong players, and they have defeated a couple of Tier 1 teams. So we'll be watching them. I think they beat the Vixen either last week or the week before. A couple other Tier 2 games that we're going to keep an eye on, the Manchester Freedom play the Crushers, and the Orlando Mayhem, the Orlando Mayhem play the Houston Energy. So as far as ratings for this week and teams, the Breakers play the Monsoon, and I'm expecting the Breakers to take that game. The Crushers play the New York Sharks. The Sharks definitely have a higher rating there. They're at a 1.8. And these ratings that I'm giving you are overall. The top rating for Macy, whatever. I know the gentleman is a very qualified person and worthy of respect, but I just haven't been able to figure out if it's Massey or Macy. Anyway, he's got the DC Divas in the top slot. The overall ratings have the Dallas Diamonds in the top slot. I think that's a little bit more accurate, but in the Massey-Macy ratings, Diamonds are second, followed by the Passion, the Militia, and then number five is the Force. In the top five of the overall ratings, you've got the Diamonds, the Militia, the Force, the Divas, and then the Amazons. So there's a little bit of fluctuation there. The Atlantic Explosion are in the top 10 on both. The Amazons are in the top 10 on both. And then the Pittsburgh Passion. The Majestics are only in the top 10 in the overall rating, whereas the Sharks are in the top 10 on the Matthew ratings. But getting back to the games that we're looking at this week, the Aftershock play the Energy, and I'm going to go with the Aftershock on that. They have a slightly lower rating, but the Energy, they've just been having a tough season. I hope they're going to take this game. I'm going to go with the Aftershock, though. I had an interview with the coach, and so I'm going to say that he's going to prepare and they're going to take this game, but we'll see. The Nemesis play the Firebirds. Nemesis is a Tier 1 team. They've got a 1.48 rating, while the Firebirds are 0.46. The Punishers are playing the Fuel. I think the Punishers will take that one. The Hurricanes play the Illusion. I'm going to go with the Hurricanes on that one. The Intensity play at the Freedom Field, and that's going to be a tough game to call. That's going to be one of the better games. That's a tough one. I guess I'll go with the Freedom on there. I tend to like the Freedom. They had some tough games and won a few, but that's a tough one to call. The Maniacs are going to be at the Amazon Stadium, and Amazon will probably, unfortunately, give the Maniacs another donut. The Militia play the Blitz, and again, that's probably going to be a pretty one-sided game with the Militia out in the front. Phoenix play the Thunder. So that is the Carolina Phoenix, and that might be the end of their rating. The Iowa Thunder have had a heck of a season. In fact, they are all over the defensive stats. So it's looking like, oh, wait a minute. No, that's wrong. I'm in the wrong league here. Sometimes I do that. The Thunder, it looks like the Carolina Phoenix will take that game. I'm sorry about that. The Queens, again, the Carolina, will play at the Nightmare Stadium. And that probably will go to the Queens. The Majestics play the Shockwave, and I think the Majestics will take that one fairly easily. The Sirens and the Quake, there's a rematch there. The Sirens handily beat the Quake earlier this season, but I believe with those adjustments it'll be a much, much better game. I still anticipate the Sirens will probably take it, but it's definitely going to be an excellent game. The Vipers are at the Justice Field, and probably the Justice will take that. And then the Wisconsin Warriors, and I mentioned them earlier, a Tier 2 team, play against the Kansas City Tribe. And I believe the Warriors will take that game. Maybe I'm wrong, but they've played such a tough schedule so far. The Tribe are a strong team. They have an excellent quarterback. And it's going to be a good game. We'll just leave it at that. I'm not at liberty to tell you how I know this, but we have some rushing leader statistics for the league, the IWFL. This is quite exciting. And now this, of course, is based on the teams who have given their stats in. And leading the rushers is Karen Silvestri, and she has an average of 8 yards a carry. She's accomplished a buildup of 580 yards. And then right after her, we have Jennifer Bean. I believe that's how you pronounce her name. And she has accumulated 327 yards. Then we have Esther Hannigan, and she's accumulated 402. Vanessa Santillan has 451. And so the top five there, and evidently not in sequential order, are rounded out by Steph Samuelson, and she has 352 yards. Now, it's not completely evident which team these girls will play have played for, so I can't give you that. It's pretty difficult for me to give you that. I'd have to do a little clicking around, and I'm not going to be able to do that. I want to get into the quarterbacks and some of the passing that's been happening in the IWFL. So we won't go into which teams. I'll recognize some of the quarterbacks. Jenny Schmidt is the leader of the pack as far as passing goes for the quarterbacks, and she has managed to throw for over 1,000 yards. And so that's pretty impressive. She plays for the Tribe. So her average is 10 yards per pass. Karen Mulligan has accumulated 619 yards. And I'm looking. She plays for the New York Sharks. And Sammy Grassif, I guess it is. I know her mom. I'm kind of following, I know her mom from our chat room. She plays for the Chicago Force. And she's accumulated 567 yards, and I'll find out how to pronounce her name correctly. So if you want to type that in there, I'll correct it on the show. I'm giving her a little clue there. For the fourth spot, as far as quarterbacks, we've got Brenda Van Kuick, and she's got 414 yards, and she plays for the – oh, I kind of messed up my categories here. She plays for the Warriors, so she has accumulated quite a few yards there, and that goes back at the Tier 2 team with one of the top five quarterbacks. So that gives you a little bit of information. She's been playing for about 5 years. And then rounding out the top five is the energy quarterback, Laura Cantu, and she's got 362 yards. So I'm going to scan real quickly, and it looks like those are the top five passing leaders in the IWFL. So let me head back to some defensive stats, because I'm a defensive-minded person, and I'll give you some of that information here. Carrie Jordan has a total of 20 tackles, and Sherry Deert, and let me see, she plays for the Warriors. Heck of a defense there, the Warriors. She's got 35 tackles. Holly Stevens, she's got 35 tackles as well. She plays for the Crush. And Shatoya Kogel plays for the Mayhem, and she's accumulated 25 tackles. And then playing for the Freedom is Jennifer Pierig, and she has 22 tackles. So we've got five players, one with 35, Sherry Deer, and then finally Kelly Jordan with 20 tackles, and she plays for the Vipers. So we see there's quite a few players that have a number of tackles. The person who's leading that stats, that particular statistic, is worthy of mention with a total of 50 tackles is Robin Taylor of the Sirens, and she's going to be playing the game tomorrow against the California Quake. So we'll see what she's able to do against Minji Martin and Angela Mims. Giving you a little correction on that, on Sammy's last name, it's Grisafi. Is that correct? She's going to type that in there in a minute. But so we've got some statistics from the IWFL, and I'm not so sure when those will be available, but it's nice to be able to get some statistics on some of the leaders there. So let me transition into the WFA. We've got about 18 minutes left, and I might be able to get back to the IWFL and give you a little bit more specifics. But we've got some pretty good games coming up here with the WFA teams. Again, we've got quite a few players, quite a few teams that have some undefeated records. And let me see if I can find those for you. Shuffling my papers here. Now, I do want to put in a little disclaimer. It seems like some of this information is not up to date, because I know that there's a couple of teams that have played, like for instance, the Jacksonville Dixie Blues. It shows that they're 1-0, and I know that they've played a couple of teams. Grisafi wants to call in. Oh, okay. Yeah, you can put her in there, and I'll stop talking for a minute. I'd love to have a caller. I have a chat board here where I can kind of keep an eye on things, and every once in a while I actually read it, and it appears that we may have a caller, so let me see if I can get some information. Now I've got a call on my landline. Okay, I guess the call is not there yet, so I'll go ahead and go back to this. The undefeated teams in the WFA, and one of them is going to be a matchup this week. The New Jersey Titans are 2-0, and they are facing the Philadelphia Liberty Bells. And we talked with the Liberty Bells' leading rusher, Mary Rose Roach, last week, and they have a dynamic running game. So we'll see. The Titans are 2-0, and the Liberty Bells are 2-0, so that's going to be a matchup to look out. The Mayhem play the Rain. The Mayhem are undefeated as yet. They're in the National Conference, and they're 2-0. They play the Rain, also in the National Conference. Let's see which division. I can't quite read that right now. I'll get back to you on that. But they are probably going to pretty handily beat the Rain. We'll move to... Do you have a caller?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, welcome to Friday Night Football Preview. Who are we talking with?
This is Kim Grisafi.
Oh,
I am
Sammy's
the mom,
mom
of Sammy Grisafi.
Excellent. Well, there's the best way for me to know how to pronounce the name, Grisafi. true.
Yeah. we get Bryce Grisoff, you know.
I'm sure you do, yeah. Well, it's a lovely name. It's just challenging. Phonetically, it's like, okay, where do I put the, yeah, okay. So what can I do for you tonight? Are you curious? You got a comment? What's going
well,
on?
Well, actually, she said that I should call in since I was a mom because it's Mother's Day weekend. It wasn't so much that I said I wanted to call in, but she said, hey, we want you to call in. So
well,
I figured I'd call in.
How appropriate is that? Mom's Day weekend, and we have a football mom on the show. That is an excellent idea. I'm sure BJ, as convincing as she is, probably had a little to do with this. But welcome, and it is a pleasure. And how do you balance that whole thing, rooting for Sammy and yet worrying about Sammy? Because I saw earlier you typed something about knees there. You have a lot of worry?
She got hurt last week's game, and you know, and it's hard being 2,000 miles away. I'm in California. She's playing for the Chicago Force, so you know, it's hard to not be there, especially when she gets injured, to you know, sort of help her heal her back to health. You know how moms want to do. So yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult, but you know,
now,
she's doing really well so far.
Good.
So
yeah. What I would assume, since she's a player, a football player, that she's fairly independent and, you know, would probably say, oh, Mom, don't worry about it. Do you think she's giving you the whole story, or she's sparing you
a
little worry?
Well, you know, being so far away, it's hard to know if she is, but, you know, I'm pretty sure she is. Since she's working still, I know she must, because she's on her feet for work, so I know she must not be doing too bad if she's working, so...
Right.
But a doctor saw her, two trainers saw her, and they really feel that it's going to be good. It'll be fine. She's still a question mark for next week. They have a bye tomorrow, but she's still a question mark for next week. But she'll see how she does through the week, I guess. So.
Well, we hope for the best. Yeah, I knew they had a bye this weekend.
Yeah.
But
so if there's any good time for an injury, I guess...
Right.
You know,
it's a well-timed, unfortunate event.
Exactly.
Yeah. Is she able to practice on it, or is she just totally laying off?
No, she's been laying off. She just goes to the practices, watches, that type of thing. Yeah, she's not doing anything. So.
Now, did Sammy grow up here and then she transplanted?
Yeah, she grew up here. And talk about independence. She grew up here, graduated high school, and found a college in Chicago and moved off, you know, straight from high school. She moved 2,000 miles away, went to college in Chicago, and that's how she ended up out there. So
you know, that happens quite a bit. The person I had on last week, Mary Rose, she moved to go to college to Temple and ended up staying in Philadelphia, and now she's playing for the Liberty Bells there. So that happened.
Yeah, and it was what I was afraid was going to happen, and it did. Because she graduated in 2007, so it's she's going on, 2 years now since she graduated. So, but, you know, she got so tied into the Force, you know, and she just loves it. She played played football since she was 10. She played out here and didn't think that she'd ever, you know, play football again until she came upon the Force, so in the IWFL.
Did she play... on like a park and rec league with the
she played
fellas,
for
or?
She started at 10 in junior All-American football, and then she played high school football. In fact, she was the first girl to play quarterback in a Division I high school here in Southern California.
Wow.
Yeah, she played for the Redlands High School Terriers.
Did she? Now, you know, I'm a teacher by trade, and I teach probably, I don't know, 15 miles from there, maybe 20, and I did not know that. I would have come to her games. That is impressive. Wow.
Yeah. She played her freshman and sophomore year, and she actually did get into a varsity game. And, in fact, she got to suit up and go to the playoffs. She didn't get to play, but Matt Leinart, they played Mater Dei, and Matt Leinart was the quarterback that they were playing against. So, yeah, that was the division she was in. So that's probably also a reason why she didn't get a lot of play time. I mean, we're talking Division I football, you know, tough.
Right.
And I think now, though, that Redlands is Division II, I'm not sure, though. I think they've moved down a division.
I'm not sure.
But, yeah, she got some great coaching, you know?
Yeah, right. Well, they've had a really strong program for a lot of years. I know a kid that's headed that direction in next season. That's been playing quite a few years of football. So that is such an advantage. You know, she's the third or fourth person that I have spoken with this season, Mary Rose, and then the person I interviewed tonight, Catherine Vivos, said that she played when she was a kid. So that's three or four players I know of, and boy, that is just going to bring the league up. I tell you, that is amazing that they were able to play.
Yeah, and I think the more years that go on and the younger players that are coming in, I think you're going to find more and more girls that have that youth football or and even maybe high school football experience. I think it's going to start happening more and more.
And the games are so similar. You know, with the Silver Bullets, I know they toured for a while, and they were very competitive in every aspect of the game except for hitting. And the hitting is so different between the baseball and softball, so it made a difference. But, boy, there's no difference in the football, so that is just going to make women's football that much stronger. That is fascinating to learn.
Yeah. You know, Sammy played, like, 10 years of boys baseball, too. She was the first girl in Redlands to be on a boys all-star team. And she'd made the switch over to softball, so it was interesting that you made that because it was difficult for her with the pitcher so close to her. She had a hard time switching from baseball to softball. She kind of had the opposite problem. So it was an interesting transition for her.
You know what? Let me take that back. You know what the difference is? It wasn't the hitting. It was the pitching.
Yeah.
That's what it was. It's the pitching. Because the girls, in fact, did, because I, of course, went to see a few of the games, and we're kind of getting off topic here a little bit, but we'll just
going into baseball.
it was the pitching that made the difference. So that handicap will not exist in women's football because there's not really the only difference that they have in our leagues for compensation is just the kicking. And, you know,
right.
You're in a soccer players, that's not really going to be an issue once more people are drawn to the game, that's for sure.
Yeah, and man, Sam, when she went into the league, she loved the ball being a little smaller because it got to be kind of big for her in high school. And then now, and the ball in the women's league is just slightly smaller, but it's great for her, you know. So she was happy about that.
Yeah, you know, I think that there's a huge jump when you go into college football, too, and then it goes back, and it's a little bit smaller in the NFL, but I'm not sure about that. I'd have to check up. Maybe BG knows. She'll probably type it in here in a minute. But it is just impressive to have all these athletes who have played for a while and have such experience, and no wonder we've got some awesome statistics. Sammy's really had quite a season, so... You know, pass the word along to her. We hope that she has a quick recovery, and we're looking for some great things from her in this, not this weekend coming, but the one after. So wish her the best.
I sure will.
And
I just want to say happy Mother's Day to all the football moms out there.
Well, and happy Mother's Day to you, and thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
All righty. Have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was great. And how appropriate that we have a football mom on today's show. I'm not sure where I left off with the statistics and predicting the games for the WFA, but let me go back. I'm sure I covered a couple of the teams that are undefeated. The Memphis Belles, you can hear Hank the Bulldog in the background there. Sorry about that. The Memphis Belles and the Jacksonville Dixie Blues are facing off this week. And those two teams are undefeated. Now, on the website, it says that the Dixie Blues are 2-0, and the Memphis Belles are 2-0, but the Dixie Blues are 1-0. But I believe that's incorrect because I have information showing that they played two games. In fact, both of those teams have played the same opponents, and it's looking like the Memphis Belles will probably take that game. But, you know, it's going to be a close one and a nice one to keep an eye on. The Austin Outlaws and the Lone Star Mustangs are facing off. This is a rematch. Austin is 2-0, and the Mustangs have at least one loss because when they played each other earlier in the season, the Outlaws won 14-13, so this is going to be a heated game. They are playing in Austin, and I think that's going to give Austin a little bit of an advantage, but we'll see who comes out on top. I'm going to go with Austin because it is their home field, but yeah, that game could absolutely go either direction. We have the Baltimore Burn playing the Keystone Assault, and I'm anticipating the Keystone Assault will take that particular game. The Sizzle travel to Pittsburgh and play the Force. Pittsburgh will likely win that one. The Cleveland Fusion play the Columbus Comets, and that's in Columbus. That's a tough one. Both teams have a one win already. As we get into the WFA season a little bit more, we'll have a little bit more to go by, but I believe probably the Comets will take that game. The Fort Wayne Flash play the Dayton Diamonds, and that's probably going to go to the Diamonds. I'm trying to kind of get everything in here. I already talked about the West Michigan Mayhem. They're 2-0 playing against the Toledo Rain. The Toledo Rain having a tough season. Probably going to have a donut on that one, but hopefully they'll score. But the Mayhem will definitely take that game easily. The Memphis Belles are playing the Jacksonville Dixie Blues. I mentioned that earlier. The Gulf Coast Riptide will travel to New Orleans to play the Blaze. I believe they'll probably take that game. The Riptide will. Kansas City Storm is playing the Missouri Phoenix. Both those teams are 0-1, so this will be a good chance for one of them to get a mark in the win column. I don't really have any good insight on that game. The Slam are playing the Machine, and the St. Louis Slam will probably win. They are going to Minnesota, so it's a road game, but I think they'll still pull that one out. And then I already talked about the Outlaw game. They'll probably take that one again since it's in their home field and they won last time, a little momentum in there. But you can't overstate the fact that the Lone Star are probably hungry to beat them since it was such a close game. We've got the Las Vegas Showgirls, probably with a bye because I think the She-Devils are not playing. And then we've got the Phoenix Prowlers and the California Lynx. And being a California girl, I'd like to root for the Lynx, but I think the Prowlers will probably take that one. So we are getting close to the end of our program. I would like to wrap it up by saying that you do have the opportunity to hear a few of the games that are going on this weekend. Let me see if I can get back to that. I'm looking like that information is gone off of my thing here. BJ, can you get that back up there so I can tell you? I know that the Sirens and there we go. The New York Sharks are playing the Connecticut Crushers, and I believe that game is going to be a broadcast game. I know that the Sirens and the Quake, that game is going to be broadcast. That's on blogtalkradio.com, WFN, Women's Football Network Radio. I believe that's probably where the Sharks and the Crushers game will be broadcast. But there's another game besides those two that will be on available for you fans to listen to, and the Shreveport Aftershock are playing the Houston Energy, and that game is also going to be a broadcast game. So you'll have to check the website because I think our program is about to cut off. Well, let me see. The Shreveport Aftershock versus the Energy will be on blogtalkradio.com /sportsgeeks. And like I said, any of this information that you are looking to find, you'll be able to go to Women's Football Talk or Women's Football Talk Continue, and it will be on there. So that's womensfootballtalk.com, and any of the information you want to find out, be sure to tune in to Women's Football Talk on Sunday when they give you some scores and as many statistics as will be available. And, again, thank you so much for listening to the show this week, and have a great week, and make sure you support women's football. So that's it for the show this evening. Code 4. It's all good.